Relentless Israeli bombardments. More than 5,600 miners have died as a result of the ongoing ruthless Israel's military assault. The death toll has surpassed 13,300 so far, including over 3,500 women, with 30,000 more people wounded, according to the Hamas-run health ministry in the Gaza Strip. The Rome sit-in took place on World's Children's Day, with the participants calling for an end to the war in Gaza, where children's rights are being violated daily.
The West is with Israel. That's why nobody says anything about the slaughter of children. It's unbelievable. Hospitals and houses are bombarded, and nobody does anything.
Italy has commercial and military agreements in place with Israel, and that's why we don't do anything. Zionism is racism. As a result, Palestinian kids are being considered second-class victims.
The sit-in held in Rome was dubbed Our Shameful Charter on the Rights of the Child, referring to a United Nations convention first issued in 1924 and successively reviewed to protect children's rights worldwide. According to the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of the Child, all children shall be protected against all forms of cruelty. However, a growing number of people in the international community believe that the bodies that are established to protect such rights, like, for instance, the International Criminal Court, have a selective and biased approach to the implementation of international law.
Killing children means killing hope to live in a peaceful and secure world. There are hundreds of UN resolutions and international right norms that Israel has never, ever observed.
During the sit-in, people brandished placards and banners reading "Our martyrs are not just numbers" and "Under Gaza's rubble, the West has buried its humanity." No Italian politicians nor mainstream media reporters attended the initiative. Max Civili, Rome.
Thousands of Pakistanis took to the streets in a solidarity march, fervently expressing their condemnation of the Israeli atrocities against the Palestinian people in Gaza.
It's not the silence from the world, it's only silence from our governors, our rulers. The people are here everywhere and all over the world. So the people are with the Palestinians.
Down the occupation!
There were chants of solidarity as passionate individuals from all walks of life gathered to voice their concerns for Palestinian lives and express support for their rights.
As a mother and as a countrywoman, I am very much upset by seeing all this. I can't sleep. It's very painful. It is a genocide and it should be stopped.
Reacting to the continuing Israeli actions in Gaza, Pakistanis expressed support for Palestinians, not just through marches, but also through aid and financial assistance. Aid agencies are calling for urgent action and support, and also demanding the immediate opening of the Rafah border crossing. Humanitarian groups have been sounding the alarm, predicting a potential deterioration of the crisis in Gaza.
The Rafah border should be immediately open, and the aid should be delivered immediately to the people of Gaza. So far, very little aid is gone. 1,000 containers is the daily requirement at Gaza. More than 1 million people have dislocated from their homes. There is a very big humanitarian crisis. Food is required, tent is required, blanket is required, medicine is required.
Meanwhile, citizens across Pakistan are stepping up their commitment to the boycott campaign against pro-Israeli businesses. The movement has garnered widespread support and engagement.
By participating in marches of solidarity and extending aid to those affected, Pakistanis are vehemently denouncing what they see as war crimes committed by Israeli forces in Gaza and sending a strong message of empathy and support for the people of Palestine. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Music. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is under mounting pressure as protests against the Israeli onslaught of the besieged Gaza Strip enter a sixth week. Demonstrators underline that it's not just the U.S. president and Israeli prime minister behind the killings of thousands of people in Gaza, saying that their government is also complicit in Israel's atrocities.
We're seeing an intensification of our people's struggle. Zionism is falling in front of our eyes. People are refusing to believe Zionist lies about the Palestinian people, about Gaza. Our numbers are growing every single week. We are seeing people all across the world take up more intense forms of direct action, refusing to be quiet, even though 6 weeks in, the Canadian government and Western governments have not called for a ceasefire, continue to send weapons to the Zionist state.
The International Center of Justice for Palestinians has announced its intention to seek the prosecution of four Canadian officials, including the Prime Minister. The organization says it will pursue all appropriate courses of action to hold them accountable before the International Criminal Court for supporting the Israeli regime.
So this case is part of a larger international collaboration to bring charges for aiding and abetting against Canadian officials who have been complicit with Israeli war crimes. All of them in their own way have been either acting or failing to act in a way that is benefiting the Israeli armed forces with great intentionality. And what we see right now is we see a situation where arms are still being shipped from Canada to Israel while it's carrying out war crimes. We see money being misappropriated from so-called charitable organizations here and being sent over to assist the occupation forces. We also see the government here failing to do anything at all to stop recruitment for the Israeli military, which is also happening right now.
Activists are calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Palestinian territory to prevent further loss of life and say that Ottawa must cancel all arms export permits to Israel and require the regime to fully comply with international law.
So we refuse for our Canadian leadership, the members we elected, to be complicit in the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. We demand that it imposes an arms embargo on Israel and that it holds it accountable to the numerous international law violations and war crimes that it has committed, not only the past 42 days, but for the past 75 years of occupation.
If the politicians and the media will not listen to us, then we will make it impossible for them to ignore us. We will not allow for business to go on as usual while a genocide takes place against our people in Gaza.
These mass protests demonstrate that people here and around the world no longer believe Israel's propaganda as people from across the country prepare for next week's national march on Ottawa. Camila Escalante, Toronto.
Another pro-Palestinian demonstration has taken place in the Yemeni capital Sana'a in solidarity with Palestinians and their resilience in the face of the Israeli aggression. Protesters also expressed support for the Yemeni government's decision to continue targeting Israel with drones and ballistic missiles. They stressed that this is a battle between good versus evil.
This is a battle against the heads and masterminds of disbelief, at the head of which is America and Israel, the great Satan and the cancer in the body of the Muslim world. By the will of Allah, victory is near.
14 nations wages airstrikes against us and all fail to deter us as we continue to fight today. We do not fear them as long as Allah is with us. We tell them that no matter how much you plot, Allah will turn their plots against them.
Last week, the Yemeni army confirmed they are able to target Israeli ships in the Red Sea and any other location. The army also stated they will target Israeli ships heading toward occupied Palestine or any other country. The Ansarullah military says its moves against Israel are part of efforts to pressure the regime in Tel Aviv to put a halt to the atrocities against Palestinians.
Yemen's armed forces will not hesitate to target all Israeli ships in the Red Sea or at any location within our reach. Yemen's armed forces will not stop launching attacks against Israelis until the regime's aggression on our Palestinian brothers ends.
The government in Sana'a believes these military moves could lead to a full-scale war with the U.S. and the Israeli regime. Despite that, Yemen leaders believe war has been permitted against those killing Muslims and forcing them out of their land.
Israel's economy is heavily dependent on imports and exports traded through Yemen's crucial Bab al-Mandab Strait. This comes as the Ansar Allah movement has announced it will not allow any Israeli shipments to pass through this strait as long as the Tel Aviv regime continues its acts of aggression in occupied Palestine. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
As you enter the playground of most schools in Lebanon, it is not only the Lebanese flag which is seen waving. Most extracurricular activities and events include some mention of Gaza and Palestine. Students here have, in their own words, expressed their utter rejection of the continuous onslaught against innocent children.
What kind of sick and twisted maniac would do this to children? Like, if we look at the facts, we see that Israel has won multiple institutions for Gaza, like the hospitals, the schools, that foster like 4 to 5 innocent kids. So by standing with them, I believe that we stand for justice, we stand for freedom, we stand for compassion.
The television and news, mostly in America and Europe, they don't spot the light on these violations because they don't want to report a message to people that the Israeli army is actually destroying the life of some innocent kids, that there is no front line defending them. This is a big challenge that we are facing right now. We should help them mentally with any type of support that we have.
We look at the screens on the TVs and you feel you just want to cry for what's happening for them. I just see something unbearable for this, incredible. We can't bear. We have to move. We have to do something for those people to save their lives. Otherwise, we are not human beings anymore.
During a school seminar, words and slogans, in addition to symbols of Palestinian resistance, are worn by the students and teachers alike.
The Palestinian kids are not only statistics of wars, they are human beings like us. They have the right to dream, the right to live, the right to have all their rights like other human beings.
I would like to express my opinion in my house, in the community, and everything, and also in supporting boys and girls in Gaza.
Shouts from protests in support of Gaza and denouncing the massacres in Palestine and Lebanon have been echoing across the capital, Beirut. People of all ages have taken part, but experts believe that this war has deeply touched the conscience of the younger generations because of the daily killing of infants, which the world has not stopped.
Today, when younger generations see the U.S.-Israeli massacre of children, they realize that the U.S. is the real enemy of all mankind. It is in the interest of all the people around the world to unite against the U.S., since it has violated all norms of humanity together with the Israeli regime.
Despite their young age and the fact that they have not witnessed any wars, Lebanon's children and youth consider the war waged on Gaza as an act of terrorism. Their confusion lies in understanding why the so-called democracies of the world support the slaughter of innocent women and children. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian described the aim of the visit to the Swiss city of Geneva as pursuing the process of delivery of humanitarian aid to Palestinians in Gaza and the end of the Israeli siege of the coastal territory.
We are pursuing process of delivery of humanitarian assistance to people in Gaza. We will have meetings with UN officials and International Red Cross organization. Some of the meetings have been held, while others are on the agenda. Definitely, the humanitarian situation in Gaza is embarrassing.
Amir Abdullahian also censured the U.S. military support for Israel, saying Washington's claims of providing aid to Palestinians are just words without actions.
We have heard from the American foreign minister saying Washington seeks to send around 500 trucks of humanitarian aid to Gaza daily. But currently, between 25 to 40 trucks are only entering Gaza. One-third of this aid is water, lacking the essential food and medicine urgently needed by Palestinians.
The Iranian foreign minister made the remarks following talks with the UN Undersecretary for Human Rights Affairs, Martin Griffiths. During their meeting, Amir Abdullahian stated Hamas resistance movement's preparedness to release Israeli civilians in exchange for the end of the regime's onslaught against Palestinians. Griffiths, for his part, highlighted the importance of this topic and thanked Iran's efforts in preventing the war from spreading. Amir Abdullahian then held talks with Volker Turk, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. Following that, he met with Mirjana Espoljaric-Egger, president of the International Committee of Red Cross. The talks all revolved around ending the siege on Gaza and the opening of the Rafah border crossing.
For the last 40 days, Israeli warplanes and tanks have been pounding the Gaza Strip. Thousands of civilians, including women and children, have been killed in the Gaza Strip. For the last 40 days, the international community has failed to propose a solution to end the war. Now, many are wondering whether the United Nations and other human rights organizations can do anything more to protect Palestinians other than just issuing condemnations. Atia Posyan, Geneva.
In the limelight.
A growing number of countries are fleeing the US dollar in international settlements, forcing Western politicians, business sectors, and leaders to admit that weaponizing currencies like the US has done is backfiring. According to new data, de-dollarization in Russia-China trade is almost complete. The ruble and yuan make up 95% of Moscow's trade with Beijing. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted the share of ruble and yuan settlements in Russia's foreign trade has surged to almost 70% as Moscow rapidly shifts away from Western currencies. And that's what Economic Development Minister Maxim Reshetnikov has said recently. The de-dollarization of Russian trade with China is almost complete, the minister told reporters on the sidelines of the Russia-China Energy Business Forum in Beijing. Reshetnikov stated, "Our trading is restructuring. If we look at the country's trade indicators as a whole, 68% of our trade is carried out in rubles and yuan, while 95% of our trade with China is settled in rubles and yuan. The issue of channels for payments has been solved." Recent data from the Economic Development Ministry shows that the yuan overtook the dollar in Russia's import settlements with China in 2022. The Chinese currency has since been used in Russian trade with Mongolia, Taiwan, the Philippines, Malaysia, the United Arab Emirates, Thailand, Japan, Tajikistan, and Singapore. The changes reflect Russia's move away from transactions in the currencies of unfriendly countries against the backdrop of sanctions. Reshetnikov also gave his assessment of Russia-China trade turnover, predicting that it could exceed the target of $200 billion and reach around $220 billion by the end of this year. A According to Global Times, de-dollarization is the process of reducing the U.S. dollar's hegemony in global trade and financial operations by shifting to alternative exchange methods, including national currencies and domestic payment systems, as well as modifying currency reserves. For roughly 80 years, the U.S. dollar has played the role of the major international reserve currency and the main means of payment in global trade. However, over the past two decades, the share of global reserves held in U.S. dollars fell from 73% in 2001 to 58% in 2023, according to some estimates. Even though the greenback continues to dominate the world's trade, being on one side of 88% of all trades as of April 2022, international players have been gradually shifting to alternative currencies. The U.S. dollar was established as the world's dominant reserve currency by the Bretton Woods Agreement, which was signed by 44 countries in 1944. The agreement also set an international system of payments by defining all currencies in relation to the dollar. Prior to that, the UK's pound sterling was the dominant currency in much of the world in 19th century and first half of 20th century alongside gold. Between the 16th and 18th centuries, the Spanish silver real called the shots in world trade and financing activities, while the Venetian golden ducats and the Florentine golden florin were widely used by Europe and the Arab world from 13th to 16th centuries. So, there is nothing new or tragic about the U.S. dollar ceding its positions to the other more convenient means of payment, investment, and holding. Global Times added, at the government level, the idea of de-dollarization was first formulated by Russia, China, and countries of Latin America in the wake of 2007 to 2008 global financial crisis, triggered by the cheap U.S. credit and lax lending standards that fueled a housing bubble that eventually burst. Prior to that, the Federal Reserve lowered the federal funds rate from 6.5% in May 2000 to 1% in June 2003. The domino effect of the U.S. financial crisis spread to the rest of the world. Thus, believe it or not, the trend of weakening of the influence of the dollar was initially created by the United States. In April 2008, then-Russian President Dmitry Medvedev announced the gradual transition to settlements in rubles, first of all in the oil and gas sector. For his part, Vladimir Putin, then head of the Russian government, proposed to the head of the State Council of China to shift part of bilateral trade between Russia and China from dollars to rubles and yuan. In July 2008, at the Mercosur summit, Brazil and Argentina decided to expand the use of the real and the peso in bilateral settlements with other Latin American states, hailing the initiative. In 2015, BRICS, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, announced that they had agreed to maintain close communication in order to develop cooperation in the monetary sphere in accordance with the mandate of the central banks of each country. This included currency swap transactions, settlements in the national currency, and direct investments in the national currencies. The de-dollarization trend was reinvigorated by the U.S. sanctions spree. Washington's expansive restriction currently covers 29% of the global economy, including 40% of global oil reserves. In addition to sanctions, the U.S. Federal Reserve has substantially raised interest rates at a time when many developing nations owe external debt in dollars. To cap it off, the U.S. and its allies restricted Russia's access to U.S. dollars and froze the nation's central bank's assets in 2022, demonstrating to other countries of the world serious risks associated with reliance on the greenback. About 85% of countries have reportedly joined the de-dollarization trend, including members of the BRICS and the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, Iran, Argentina, Turkey, the United Arab Emirates, and Saudi Arabia. While BRICS is seeking to establish a common currency for the countries of the group, ASEAN is moving to settlements in local currencies by further enhancing the bloc's cross-border digital payment system. Other countries are exploring alternative means of payment for global settlements such as the Chinese yuan or renminbi, the UAE dirham, or Indian rupee. The Chinese currency is also seen by some players as a convenient reserve currency. For instance, Russia's finance ministry doubled the amount of RMB and gold in the National Wealth Fund, while some Russian companies, such as Rosneft, issued bonds denominated in renminbi. BRICS has doubled down on de-dollarization after the collective West curbed Russia's access to the global dollar-based payment system, SWIFT, and froze its central bank's assets in the wake of the beginning of Moscow's special military operation in Ukraine. At the same time, the U.S. Federal Reserve aggressive interest rate hikes made the greenback both toxic and expensive for foreign borrowers and those who paid for the foods, raw materials, and other commodities in U.S. dollars. In January 2023, BRICS announced that it may soon explore the possibility of creating its own currency to bypass the U.S. dollar. The idea was articulated on both sides of the Atlantic by Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and President of Brazil Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. A single BRICS currency could initially play the role of a unit of account for settlements in national currencies and conversion without the use of the dollar, as per Russian economic observers who project that in the future it could receive the status of a reserve currency not only for the bloc members but also for the other role players. The idea of the common BRICS currency popped up before the Russian special operation. In 2018, Russia's Vladi Club articulated the concept of an SDR-type currency basket composed of BRICS currencies, national currencies. A potential new reserve currency was called R5, which represented the first letters of BRICS members' currencies, real, ruble, rupee, renminbi, and rand.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
brutal war in Gaza is still raging after a month and a half, claiming the lives of more than 13,000 people, mainly children. Hospitals have turned into mass graves, and people have problem accessing essentials to survive. BRICS members, meantime, and some others have come up with proposals in their extraordinary meeting on Gaza today. And it seems that Qatar and Egypt mediated talks aimed at establishing truce are going to bear fruit soon. Now, is that a good omen? What's in the offing? Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. To begin with, let me introduce our guests in this episode. Masoud Chejer, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in Tehran. And Zainul Abidin Gaddafi, coordinator of the Zaki Foundation South Africa, joining me from Cape Town.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to both gentlemen. Let me begin with Masoud Chejer. Masoud, Iran and a few other countries have been asking for a unified stand and concerted action against Israeli crimes. The question I want to ask you is, this is what, of course, some other countries, a few countries have stressed, and they also agree with Iran. But what does it take for this to realize?
Well, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The reality is that it's not just end of atrocities and genocide, which international community should seek, but indeed sort of addressing this sort of the largest genocide in our lifetime that we have really noticed unleashing in front of our eyes, on our television screens, and such a brutality needs to be addressed is, of course, the first thing and the most important thing is end of the this genocide. But I think unless we address the sort of those who committed this and bring them to some sort of justice, then what we are doing, we are not only not addressing the issue right now, but we are legitimizing this sort of behavior, which indeed will be totally unacceptable, and indeed I think will create problems in the future in the international relations, and indeed the sort of international law and how countries could or could not behave.
Mm-hmm. Now, Zainul Abidin, there are also talks of trying to take the war criminals of the Zionist regime to the ICC or a court of justice. How would that be possible? Iran is supporting this idea, stands with those who support this. So how could justice be served eventually one day? Is the ICC in charge? It has a jurisdiction, but so far, it, when you look at the past performance, you don't see much coming out of it.
Bring us on your show. Indeed, Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, is supporting the call to charge the or to take the issue of the criminal regime, incorrectly known as the State of Israel, to the International Criminal Court. We do realize that the Islamic Republic of Iran has consistently, since the establishment of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, supported all means and all avenues to bring about justice, to stand against the criminal enterprise, the illegitimate regime, and to support the oppressed people of the world, especially Palestine, as the central cause of the oppressed people. By this, the Islamic Republic has supported the Palestinians in terms of aid, politically, in terms of support, in terms of monetary support, logistical support for the resistance in Palestine, and by all other ways, including diplomatic means. And on this policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran to support the oppressed people of Palestine in each and every way, they are supporting an avenue, which is, of course, the call to have the ICC prosecute the illegitimate regime. However, we need to remain cognizant of these facts, that the illegitimate regime, number one, has never ever respected international law. They've always been in contravention of United Nations resolutions with regards to the Palestinian issue, and have shown a blatant contempt for any sort of peace and any sort of restorative justice for the Palestinian people. Number two, the Zionist regime is not a member of the ICC, and they have consistently been fighting against and arguing the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court with regards to the Palestinian matter. We also see that the ICC has only ever taken up 31 cases, of which all of those people that they've attempted to prosecute were from Africa, and never have they gone after the criminals in the Americas, in Europe, and the criminals of the Zionist regime. So this is an important call to support, and we acknowledge that the Islamic Republic support all methods to bring about restorative justice for the Palestinian people.
Right. Master Chandra, let's look at it from a broader perspective. The whole war, it's the 46th day already passed, in a few hours of the 47th day. So what has Tel Aviv achieved out of this? Its military campaign has failed. Hamas has been able to shatter all this, you know, the superficial facade of grandeur and so-called invincibility and military prowess. Its campaign of lies also failed. It's losing the trust of the public opinion around the world. People out there on the streets, you know, they know what Israel is doing to Palestinians. They want that to stop. And also the ground invasion, it dragged its feet so much. It threatened, I'll do this, I'll do that. Okay, they just embarked on the ground invasion. And again, they haven't achieved much. So up to this stage, is this not per se a victory for the Palestinian resistance fighters?
Absolutely. They haven't achieved anything. If anything, what we are very clearly witnessing is that Israelis are exposed. Once and for all, they're really exposed right across the world. Public opinion, even in the United States and Europe, has turned against them in a way that has never happened before. And I think even internally, the divisions are very clear. Mm-hmm. And indeed, they will show themselves even more once the ceasefire happens. So, and also militarily, they have actually lost. Because, the illusion that Israel, this occupied regime, created was that they're untouchable, that they are number one in intelligent sort of apparatus and so forth. All those illusions are destroyed, and they are exposed. They're exposed as a apartheid war criminals who are actually getting involved in killing children, destroying hospitals, hitting UN center, depriving people of water basic needs. And this has never happened in the recent years. And I think they have lost every level. So really, they haven't achieved anything. The victory is with the Palestinians. And I have to say, it's very sad they have paid such a price for it, but right, they are victorious morally and indeed other ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, Zain al-Abidi, in the same lines, I just wanted to ask your comment, because it's lots of dimensions to this, to what the Israeli regime has actually failed to achieve, and defeat on top of defeat and failure over failure. And they've shown their true color, like when the minister asked that, why not nuke people in Gaza and get rid of them all? at once. So it made other states fear that, hey guys, they have their nuclear arsenals that they never came clean about. So they proved that they could be a threat to global security. Internal division and rift is deepening, as Masoud rightly mentioned. And intelligence, their intelligence failure, actually. The beginning of the operation Hamas, Al-Aqsa flood operation, Netanyahu was saying, I was not informed about this. And is that a joke or what? Look at the intelligence. And even the EU is now saying, EU that's been backing the Tel Aviv regime and saying they're doing the self-defense, that's legitimate. Now they're saying, okay, he had a trip, Josep Borrell, for 5 days in the West Asia region. He was criticized by a large number of activists. He said, now, EU, we need to empathize with Palestinians, and we need to do more.
100%. The military failure, as well as the failure in all other fields of the Zionist regime, has been exponential in the current 46-day escalated aggression upon the Palestinian people. The fact that the Zionist regime were in a position where they thought and presented themselves to be at the strongest they've ever been. They had a normalization deal in place, and they were protected politically with the normalization with the various Arab states. They had the Iron Dome and other military equipment and other military matters in place to protect themselves. They were at the strongest relationship with the Biden regime, with the Biden administration in the United States, and the Zionist regime were at the most powerful position they thought they could ever be in. On the 7th of September, with the launch of Al-Aqsa flood, all security, all measures, all intelligence networks and every means put in place by the Zionist regime was completely shattered, because they could not even preempt this military attack that was exercised with precision and excellence from the Palestinian resistance within the concentration camp called the Gaza Strip. Not only that, the fact that they've continued to kill more than 13,000 people, bombed indiscriminately residential areas, hospitals, schools, UN buildings, killed more than 5,000 children, stopped the basic necessities from reaching the Palestinian people, all in an attempt to re-establish that facade of invincibility. It proves their failure. And as the leader of the revolution, Imam Khamenei, just recently said that them going into hospitals, occupying hospitals, shows the defeat of the Israeli regime, because there can be no military excellence and precision in occupying hospitals that are there to support the innocent people. Not only that, the countries around the world are turning against them, even if many countries now are recalling their ambassadors temporarily to achieve a ceasefire. It is showing that the Zionist regime exposed themselves to the people of the world, to the governments of the world, and more on a daily basis. People are realizing the genocidal, murderous, illegitimate face of the Zionist regime. Therefore, they've exposed themselves. The resistance of the people of Palestine, their resilience and their patience has benefited them. And today they are in a position which, of course, shows that they are with the truth and that the enemy is being exposed.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Now, Masoud, there is also this word around regarding a truce that's likely around the corner. You know, Palestinians have been saying since weeks ago that we are ready for prisoner swap, and also. And now, let's first talk about truce, and then we'll come to prisoner swap. And this Egyptian and also Qatari mediated, let's say, negotiations—they're bearing fruit, and that's what both sides are talking about. So if this truce is established, would that not mean that Palestinians have been able to have their conditions met? And would it not be considered another victory for them?
Yes, absolutely. I think the fact of the matter is that what we have seen is being one of the most brutal, deliberate genocide, to kill as many innocent people, as many sort of children, as many hospitals, as we discussed. And it hasn't had a sort of a military objective. We sort of see that, yes, they have committed the genocide. If genocide was the aim of this regime, then they are victorious, because they have actually committed one of the greatest genocide of our time. But if it's anything else, either security or any other excuses that they have used, they have failed, and they have failed abysmally, and they have not achieved even a single one of those goals. And as I said, they expose themselves, and not just exposing themselves as genocidal, but also their supporters. I mean, you know, they drag United States and Europe leaders into sort of the same category. They are also as guilty of these genocide as those who committed it. So really, I think overall, is a tremendous victory. It's overshadowed with the loss of so many lives, which it affects every single one of us. Watching and seeing these destruction of the innocent lives, but nevertheless is a victory, and is a victory for the Palestinians, and is a victory for those who support Palestinians. And it actually shows us that there is no longer the Israelis could go and claim this sort of false claim, the lies that they were using, and indeed they are exposed in a very tremendous way.
Right. Now, Zain al-Abidin, South Africa hosted this BRICS summit regarding the situation in Gaza. Iranian president also had his comment, and he announced his country's readiness to support the idea of, putting the war criminals of the Israeli regime on trial. And there were many other proposals, severing ties, and you know what I'm talking about. And we have South African President Ramaphosa saying that the root cause of this conflict is actually the illegal occupation. So what can be done about this basic and the root cause of the problem? And what's the path toward resolution of the issue once and for all?
Yes, the statement by the President of the Republic of South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa, with regards to a legitimate regime, acknowledging on a public platform within the BRICS that, of course, the root cause of the issue is the illegal occupation. This is a step in the right direction. This is a good step, that it's not only the same rhetoric that is coming from the Islamic Republic and from countries like Syria, but it's coming from a dispensation like South Africa, that we need to recognize that the core root cause of the issues in the Middle East and of this genocide is the fact that there is an illegal occupation of Palestinian land. Now, this matter can be taken forward. We need to then ask, if the root cause is the illegal occupation, which part of the occupation is not illegal? And of course, the simple answer is that every part of the occupation, every part of the existence of the Zionist regime is illegal. It is an illegal occupation, a usurpation, and a military aggression on the people of Palestine. It is therefore the call which is supported by the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is the call to support the resistance of the Palestinian people and the resistance of the people of the region, and that is the removal of the illegitimate colonial entity. Only once the land is returned to the respective owners, we are speaking about the 1948 land where there was no Zionist illegitimate entity establishing themselves incorrectly as a state, only then we can say that the illegal occupation has ended, that the restorative justice is given back to the people, that Palestinians of all persuasions are allowed to return to their land, and that the Palestinian people themselves, without a military occupation or any occupation of any sort, can determine their own future and their own sovereignty. And therefore, we support the call of the Islamic Republic of Iran to support the resistance and the armed resistance of the Palestinian people to fight and to attain their liberation.
Okay. And Masoud, I want your comments regarding the same question, because it's really a main question. It's been lingering on for more than seven decades now. The question is the solution to this once and for all. Some countries are saying President Trump pushed for a so-called deal of the century. No regard for Palestinians, only one-sided deal. Palestinians said this is a stab in the back. And then we have some other countries still pushing for the so-called two-state solution. Now, Tehran's saying that let's hold a referendum. Let's have Palestinians decide about their own fate. Even Palestinian expatriates and the diaspora, they should have their own fate in their hand. So let's have your opinion on this.
I mean, it's very, very clear that the sort of the two-state solution is only an illusion to sort of keep alive the illegal occupation and an apartheid system. Both illegal occupation and apartheid has got a legal definition under international law, and they both have to be removed. And you can't remedy apartheid and illegal occupation by just massaging and trying to reform it. It has to be removed. It was removed in South Africa, and therefore created an environment where blacks and whites and others could actually live together and begin a sort of a future. It's the same thing here. We have to remove the illegal occupation. We have to remove this apartheid system. And then we are beginning to find a solution. The two-state solution has been just an illusion, which was deliberately used and abused to expand the occupation, expand the apartheid system, and expand this brutal abuse day in, day out against the ordinary Palestinians, not just in Gaza, but in West Bank and everywhere else. So, yes, no reform. It has to be removed. And replaced by what the majority people want, so therefore a referendum. That makes such a common sense that for anyone who wants to find a solution, mm-hmm. all other solutions, including or illusions,